This is Andy.
And this is Matt.
And you're listening to
The Hop Podcast with No Name.
What a dumb name.
It's so stupid. Episode 58. From the comfort of our own home and not in a moving vehicle. which is a good place to start from.
And also our each individual homes. You're in the comfort of your home.
Yeah, our own home.
Yeah. That's English. Yeah, that's how one would say that.
Got it. First try. No notes. We have a different episode than normal.
Is it? I don't know. It's not that different. I think it's just maybe one of the we could probably count it on one hand, the number of times that you're like, no, Andrea, we should talk about this, like that you have something so passionate that you're like, we need to talk about this. I think that's what makes it different.
I also think it's different because it's less of a, hey, here's a story that you went through and here's what you go and do differently. Maybe it's, we have a story that of what we're going to talk about that you went through and I've been through in a lot of different ways. It's maybe not a direct answer. And like, this is what you do tomorrow to change it. It's more of, here's what you could be aware of and how you might tackle it. But there's not like a cut and dry answer. It's more.
What do you mean we're not going to be super helpful? Because we're always super.
Yeah, we are often described as the most helpful podcast on the internet.
Let's not pretend that all the rest of our episodes have clear cut and dry. Here's the problem and the story and here's something you can go do about it.
They're not not.
That would give us far too much credit.
Yeah. So this is okay. So if we put it in a category of somewhat helpful and somewhat unhelpful, this is going to be maybe in the middle somewhere. But I think we're I feel pretty passionately about talking about this. It's to me very universal and has nothing really to do with safety.
No, just leadership.
Yeah. Which we get a unique perspective because we're constantly given sort of a peek behind the curtain to do a little bit of a Wizard of Oz reference there. And we get to really see all levels of leadership in all different organizations, from them making large macro level decisions to just their day to day. And we get to see all that in between. And so we're often privy to a lot of very cool stuff, but also a lot of stuff that, we hear from leaders, we get to go and talk to those doing the work and hear from them and hear what leadership thinks and hears lines up or doesn't line up with what the reality is of those doing the work. I think it's a very unique position that we get to be in and not something that we take for granted, but is super, I'll just say, interesting to hear the differences and the similarities.
Yeah, we get to sort of do like the, what was that TV show? The Undercover Boss TV show, except we're neither we're not the boss. I've used this analogy.
Yeah,
before.
It's definitely it's Undercover Boss, only we're not the boss or undercover, but it's exactly like that show.
But exactly. So if you're not familiar with the TV show, it's when like the COO or CEO dresses up and then gets to go be part of their own front line and learn firsthand, you know, what the perspective is. And we get to do that sort of, where we get to go talk to the folks who are generally making some of the larger decisions in an organization and hear their perspective about how work is done and the culture that they're in and what people feel and think and what leadership is, how leadership is viewed. And then we go get to talk to the folks that they're generally referring to and get to hear that story from different perspectives. And I'm not saying one is right or wrong. But for sure they don't line up. I don't know, right? The narratives in most places are very, very different from each other. And we had an experience that was like sort of a jarring juxtaposition between those two narratives, which is, I think, one of the reasons you feel passionate about talking to it. Is that fair, Matt?
Yeah. I think jarring is actually probably even an understatement, just given maybe the severity of what we learned.
Yeah.
But it was definitely severe enough to cause us to really sit and reflect and say, I wonder if this message got to leaders what it could do, I guess. Mm. It was sort of my thought was if
wait, when you say this message, what do you mean? Can you clarify?
I can't because we're going to tell a story. And so that's okay. The message.
But the message from the front line, you mean? What,
yes.
If that message?
Yeah. The we are often viewed once people hear about HOP, about why we're there, what we're doing. Often we get in a very fortunate position for people to just trust us and feel like they can tell us things that they can't tell their leadership directly.
Yeah.
And this is one of those examples where we ended up learning something that was so severe that I wonder what impact it would have if it made it to leaders that directly.
Yeah. And so we'll just try to tell the story of, you know, working with an organization. We had the privilege to talk to someone in the top leadership. We'll just say it's a COO. Is that fair enough in terms of like a general job position, Matt, that we could use as a placeholder?
Sure.
Yeah. So a VP or a COO having a conversation, and the portion of the organization was not a huge group of people. And the narrative that we kind of learned is that it's a very strong family dynamic and that there's a lot of trust between people and there's a lot of, you know, open dialogue and that they've made a lot of improvements recently. And there was so much of the conversation about how good the communication was that actually I personally started to be worried that maybe we weren't going to be helpful. Like there's been a few times that we've gone to places and it feels like, for lack of a better way of saying it, like we're preaching to the choir of like, well, yeah, no, this makes total sense. And we do this all the time. And so I kind of don't really even understand why you're here. That's not very often that happens, but it has happened enough times that in this conversation with the senior leader, I'm starting to think, well, I mean, I wonder if there's a different group we should be helping, because these guys seem to feel like they've got it under control and they understand the direction that they want to be moving in. And it sounds like they're already doing it. So part of me actually questioned why we were even asked to come. And then, you know, we had conversation with a larger group of people and we had, you know, presentation, discussion, training, whatever you want to call it. And the team was really, really quiet, which for us is always a red flag.
Massive. I mean, my first couple of trainings, it was cold sweat red flag. And now it's a red flag, but I'm always thinking to myself, it's probably something we don't know that's happening right now.
And there's always the dynamic, especially if you get to be in person or you're virtual and you can see people's faces, where you ask a question and you can kind of tell that people want to respond by their facial expression, but they're not saying anything. And in those circumstances, I'm either thinking I've done something to make it not safe to respond, or something about the dynamic of the room or the group of people makes it so that it's not safe to respond. That's generally the default. And in this circumstance, because there had been so much discussion around how open this team was in terms of their ability to work together and communicate and work as a group, as this cohesive family unit, my interpretation was that I've done something wrong, or I'm once again telling stories to people who already get this. And this is sort of like a foolish feeling to them, like a foolish waste of their time, because, you know, I'm not saying anything that's different from how they currently do things. And that was my understanding of the dynamic of the room, why it was so quiet. And I think we would have left with that understanding if there hadn't been an individual that stayed behind and honestly stayed behind for a fairly significant amount of time. Like we were having conversation with other people and I don't know, Matt, remind me if I'm wrong, like a good half an hour.
Yeah,
of
that's
time.
Exactly what I was going to say. About half an hour where we were talking to some other leaders and they were just sort of sitting off to the side,
you know,
waiting.
Yep. And then as soon as the room kind of cleared out, this individual who was, lower in the organization in terms of the hierarchy, had conversation with us. And the reality that he painted about the organization was so jarring in comparison to what the senior leader had told us that it was hard to wrap my head around how both of those narratives could be true to two individuals that theoretically worked with the same group of people. And the narrative was that things were so bad there, in terms of trust, in terms of respect between people, in terms of how people were trained to do things, in terms of the type of culture you were brought into and how you were treated if you were in the front line, and some of the folks that were helping supervise the front line, that he was surprised that more people hadn't died by suicide. And then told us that some already had.
Yeah, because of how terrible the
environment
dynamics
was
and the relationships were at the front line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which couldn't have been farther from what we'd heard up until that moment. Could not have been more starkly different than what we've been told by some leaders as to how great their environment was and their communication was, and how great it was working together. And so it was hard. And we got back to the car and we just kind of looked at each other like, whoa, that's severe and concerning. And a lot of those adjectives that we used.
Yeah. And I think the trickiest part of this is I want to make sure that we paint the picture well, because obviously, you know, anyone listening to this only has our narrative of other people's narratives. But from everything that I know to be true about people, both individuals felt like they were telling the truth. Like, obviously I don't have like, I don't have like a lie detector, right? I'm, you know, I, for sure, you know, I could be bamboozled by individuals, but in having conversation with the leadership team, there was no indication to me that they thought that they were lying. They weren't using words. You know, oftentimes when people are in an organization and they're trying to spin a narrative, they use what we would call corporatese, right? They don't speak genuinely. Their behavior and the tone of their voice isn't something that comes across as genuine. It's got a lot of terms that you wouldn't use in normal conversation. It always feels like they're steering the conversation, right? So they're trying to say the message they want to say. They don't leave a lot of room for you to ask questions. They don't invite curiosity. That was not the case with the leadership that we spoke to. They invited curiosity. Wanted to know our perspective, told the narrative without, without using any language that would point me to believe that they were just trying to impress us or make us think a specific way about their organization.
They did not say the phrase promote synergy at all. That's always my,
there was no
I'm always
synergy.
Listening for that.
And I think that's part of what made this specific interaction, obviously, apart from, you know, how very disparate the thought process was between the two groups, made it so, I don't know, hard, emotionally hard, made it feel like there's a problem to be solved here that obviously the folks that spend an enormous amount of time teaching and helping others learn how to create psychological safety, it seems incredibly important. But Matt, I mean, correct me if you think I'm wrong, the individuals that we spoke to from the leadership team did not come across to me as someone who wasn't good at creating psychological safety, at least in their conversation with us. They created it with us quite quickly.
Yes.
And maybe it's completely different for other folks. I don't know, right? We weren't privy to that. We didn't get to work with this group for a very long time. But there was still this underlying tone of fear. And the fear wasn't necessarily created by these top leaders. It seemed to be, it was the folks in between.
Yeah.
Whereas that you could theoretically have a great open conversation with these top leaders, but they weren't going to be the people controlling your day to day. The people controlling your day to day were the folks that were creating, seemingly to create this fear and this angst and this honestly, like a day to day life that was so difficult for people that they felt trapped. So much so that they didn't feel like they had other options.
And I would just say to paint a picture of you know how large the organization is, the chance of the person who the frontline worker who gave us this information and the leader that we spoke to, the chance of them interacting on a day-to-day basis, severely low. If that frontline worker wanted to get a meeting with that senior leader, weeks or months it would take. I mean, there was just not it was a lot of layers in between. And their interaction potential was very low.
Yeah. And we don't, I mean, obviously we don't have any answers. The whole reason behind why we teach a lot of what we teach in this space of HOP and in the concept of psychological safety is to help bridge that communication and narrative gap, right? To make steps towards great leaders getting great information so they can make great decisions. And I would have told, I mean, this seemed like a great leader, but the information that was provided to him wasn't accurate, at least not accurate according to the narrative of the people that he was requesting the information from. And what's fascinating is that despite teaching this, I myself found, even in the brief interaction that we had had, falling into the same problem of, and what I mean by problem is trying to give the leader sort of the information that I think he wanted to hear. I'll give you an example. I mentioned that when people are quiet, for us, it's a big red flag. It's a red flag that there's something going on in the dynamic of the room that makes it hard for people to speak up.
Which is, just to be clear, you mentioned either it's a you problem or a room situation that we're not aware of. Which is why we're usually together for training, because one of us can say like, ooh, you should not have said that. That was bad.
You're going to have to fix that in order for people to be able to.
You should walk that back a little bit. I think you came on a little strong. This was not, I was there. I can clearly say it was not something you had said that was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this leader was curious enough that there was questions about like, hey, have you seen patterns of when people are quiet like this? And we have. I mean, the short answer is we absolutely have. The answers that I gave the leader would not have pointed them to believe it was something that they were doing or the leadership team in the room was doing, which from the patterns that we've seen could absolutely be one of the reasons. Instead, you know, I talked to like generalities of, you know, sometimes it's difficult to, you know, have conversation with large groups like this, or, you know, perhaps the way that I gave the discussion in this circumstance, you know, made it hard for people to feel like there was room to jump in. Like I gave other reasons apart from, yeah, well, it could be you, or it could be the other leaders in this space are making it really uncomfortable for people to speak up. And that should be something you'd look into. I didn't say that. And I didn't say that if I had to pick apart my thought process, because in the moment it felt like I was the one missing something, because this leader could not be missing it, right? There's no way that they were missing this dynamic. It must be me.
And we had this is a group that we had very limited exposure to. Correct. Just to be clear, we didn't have experience prior to this conversation with the frontline. We had no exposure.
Yep.
So we were just coming in, and you know, that was what we'd been told. This whole interaction that we've done over these past 19 minutes or so is just, that's all we got. That's all the information we had going into this conversation too.
Yep. And the lack of information made me not say all of what I was thinking, which I actually in general pride myself on being pretty genuine with what I say out loud, meaning I don't usually have a second script running in my head as to the rest of what I should be saying. I find a way to say those things. And I remember very distinctly having this second script in my head and not saying any of it. And then I'm like, well, this is part of the problem. Like I am right now demonstrating part of the problem. Great leaders need great information. And we hadn't yet at this moment had the conversation with the front line, right? So it's not as though we had that information and withheld it. By the time we had the conversation, the leader had already, you know, left. But without, you know, without even the specifics of that narrative, we still had a thought of, I mean, there's something going on in this room that we just don't know what it is.
The problem is we'd have to have made a lot of assumptions to give them that feedback, you know, it would have had to, and for everything we'd been given up until that moment, we had no reason to believe that there was something else besides just, hey, it's a big room. They're a little quiet.
Yeah. And that sort of prompted us to start thinking about other times in, at least, you know, your world and my world historically, where we, you and I as individuals in our former roles, have been part of the problem. Meaning, we mentioned so many times, right? Great leaders make great decisions when they have great information, but the social ramifications for offering up that great information can sometimes feel too difficult. It can be too hard to do, despite the fact that you know it. And we see it on phone calls with folks all the time. I mean, even when we're having discussions about setting up training, and you can sense when suddenly there's a political discussion that's happening kind of between the lines of the narrative that we're not privileged to, but it's very clear that, well, somebody's got to clear it with somebody else and, you know, weave this other narrative to allow this other thing to happen. But I just remember circumstances even in, you know, bringing in senior leaders into a site. And this is probably familiar to a lot of folks, but, you know, we would set up the route that we wanted that individual to see. And we used to call it the parade route. And there were very specific areas that we did not want the leader to see, because there was fear that it would reflect poorly on the leadership of the site or the progress that has been made so far. And it wouldn't, you know, we would say things to each other like, well, it wouldn't tell our story well. And I remember, this is fairly early on into my career, I remember sitting in those meetings where I was being kind of told the path that this person was going to follow. And I was part of the group that was going to help shepherd them from location to location. And sometimes I was given talking points of say.
It's just funny to mention you being the one tasked with this. I would question that leader's decision-making already. Like, Andrew's going to, she's going to lead them around. Oh, wow. This is going to be a good meeting.
I'd be tasked with, you know, talking points to talk in like specific areas to literally point somebody to a different direction of, hey, let's look over here. I want to tell you a story of what's going on over here. And I remember at that point in my career, maybe not have been indoctrinated into the social norms of organizations enough that, you know, somebody might say I was, you know, too stupid to keep my mouth shut. Because I said it out loud.
Some would say that.
I said out loud, I feel really uncomfortable doing this because it feels like we're lying. And I remember very specifically, I was told, well, Andrea, you just need to learn how to play the game. You don't know how this works in an organization. And so you're going to have to learn how to play the game, or you're not going to go anywhere in your career. And it's just the price of playing the game.
I mean, let's just be honest. It's the barrier to great information.
It is. Yeah. Right?
It's that simple. If great leaders make great decisions with great information, one of the biggest barriers to great information is the game. It's the, it's the politics. It's the inherent fear that's created when there is someone senior around.
Yeah.
No matter how great that leader, this is not a knock on senior leaders. It is the inherent dynamic that is created that as someone who became senior in an organization and reported to the CEO or to the CRO, I know for sure that there is just a fear that comes with what can I show them? What can't I show them? Mm. I want to be honest, but I also want to look like we're doing what we need to be doing so that they can trust me, so that my career, the careers of those that work with me, is in a good spot. And it's often in conflict with what needs to be said or done or shared or conveyed. And you have to walk a very tight rope. You have to play the game. And then hopefully, you know, you can build enough trust and rapport that you can pull them aside. And this happened to me and say, hey, I just want to be clear. I do have some concerns that maybe we should talk about more directly. But that was at great risk I did not do that more often than I did it because of the fear.
So it was rare that you would put yourself in the position of telling that sort of more honest narrative because of the potential political consequence to your career, other people's careers.
Correct. That's exactly right. And I think for a while I thought that was just me.
Yeah.
And I can say confidently that it's not. It's almost everywhere that we go, there is this playing of the game that makes these leaders that, as you go higher up, have more resources, more decision rights, more authority, gives them worse information.
Yeah. And I think that the trickiest part of this strange cycle is, sometimes the folks that we talk to that we get to hear the narrative of like, yeah, well, it's not really as rosy and wonderful as you know, these other folks are painting this to be. Like, here's more of the nitty gritty gross reality. And we get to learn that when we have conversation around kind of what makes it hard to bring it to the senior leaders, sometimes it is how they respond to information.
Yes.
Other times.
Yeah. 51-49. Right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it really is. And sometimes we experience that ourselves, right. As a person interacting with them. But oftentimes it is, as you described, it has to do with the nature of the role, right? It's not the individual, but the nature of the role. And then this sort of strange cycle of, well, if I play the game, then I get to be the person who's in that position and I can make better decisions, right? I just have to play the game enough to get to that position and then I can make change.
Exactly. But then
that person who's there also doesn't get the great information, right? Because other people are playing the game to get that, you know, even with your best intent of trying to learn, it is incredibly difficult to do if people are not willing to provide you with the raw nitty gritty details of reality because of the nature of your position, even if you've worked really hard to make yourself accessible and make yourself somebody that's easy to talk to, make yourself easy to tell bad news to, even when all those things are true, when you're somebody's boss's boss's boss, there's a lot of people in between, right? So there's a whole lot of information that would be really helpful for you to know. And there's a whole lot of filters in between that are helping sort of tamp down information or control it. I mean, one of the nice things about having external eyes is that, you know,
external eyes as opposed to what? Humans generally have external eyes, yes.
Having like somebody come into an organization like we do is oftentimes we get to tell the really bad news for someone. We didn't in this circumstance.
We didn't know it yet in our defense.
And we probably have to follow up and have a real conversation with this leader. But we get to take those political risks. I mean, they really, because they're not as risky to us, right? I mean, it's a different dynamic to be from the outside. But it just makes me think back to how we frame fixing this from the inside, right? Because you can't rely on outside eyes to be telling the emperor they're not wearing any clothes. But it's just a very, very difficult dynamic in the inside of an organization for anyone to be able to have that much of an open dialogue, which is why we know we don't have any answers, right? So that's where we started, right? We have as much of an answer as we know how to give, because it's kind of what we teach all the time. And how do you create a dynamic where people are willing to have this open conversation? But it's amazing, even with those steps, you get closer to the narratives being similar, but it's really hard when you're in a senior leader position to get the right level of information to make good decisions with. It's really, really hard.
I think, you know, Eric Bartsch in our conversation, and I think of like Dawn Worst, they do such a great job of asking the right questions to those people who can go and find the information for them.
I'm
constantly brought back to that idea as it was a change in their own individual thought process, and then it led to different questions being asked, and the people that worked with them started seeing the consistency of different questions and said, huh, I need to go and learn different information, and that really changed the conversation. That's all I can bring up as an option, as like a to-do if we have anything, right? for leaders.
But that is like the senior leader dependency, right? It's like, and that's the trickiest part, is that that is the entire dynamic of information flow. The scariest aspect of it is it can be built or destroyed by one person in a key position, which we all know. I mean, we've all experienced it. Yeah. We inherently know that to be true. This was probably the most stark truth. Yeah. Yep. In terms of the narratives being so vastly different from each other.
Well, it took us 30 minutes to the nose to get there. I mean, I don't know if there'll be a part two to that. I think this is just something that we felt needed to get out, because it's something that we see and is concerning, I think, is just this gap and this barrier to great information getting to people who have authority to make change. Yeah. We could say everyone has the best intentions, it's still the barrier because of the dynamics that are in play and the game that's in play.
Yep. And we'll do our part to tell the narrative when we can.
Sure. That's it. Wow.
That's all.
That's how we end it.
That's the only thing we can offer, I think.
Yeah, this is a interesting episode for us, but thank you for listening. And we'll talk again soon.
Well, that's it.
Yep, another one in the books. We did it.
If you want to send us any of your thoughts, actually fling us any of your thoughts, you can do so at the website www.hoppodcast.com.
That's hoppodcast.com.
It's still such a stupid name.
We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening.